The Vision of the Anointed, Self-Congratulation as a Basis for Social Policy by Thomas Sowell. Basic Books, 1995, 320 pages. A Brief Book Summary from Books at a Glance by Benjamin J. Montoya. About the author. Thomas Sowell is a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, Stanford University. He is the author of dozens of books, including Charter Schools and Their Enemies, the winner of the 2021 Hayek Book Prize. He is the recipient of a number of awards, including the National Humanities Medal presented by the President of the United States in 2003. Introduction. Our society is filled with people who view themselves as anointed with a vision that is based on convictions of a different sort. What is this vision? Who are these people? Why and how has their vision become so influential that it has affected society at large? Consider this summary to learn more. Chapter 1. Flattering Unction. There is a certain vision that is prevalent in our day, just as there has been in various associated visions in times past. Today's prevailing vision is markedly different from visions of previous ages. Instead of allowing itself to be questioned, critiqued, improved upon, etc., this vision does not allow anything of the sort. This vision claims that it is concerned about the environment, the less fortunate, claiming minorities as an example in their view of justice. This vision also prizes itself in being anti-war. Although these things may sound good on the surface and seem quite admirable, there is more to watch because their concern for these various issues is not what it seems. This vision originates from the political left, and the result is such that they want to see a new kind of government exercise its authority to coerce people to join this vision. 4 steps characterize how this vision is enacted. Number 1, assertions of a great danger to the whole society, a danger to which the masses of people are oblivious. Number 2, an urgent need for action to avert impending catastrophe. 3, a need for a government to drastically curtail the dangerous behavior of the many in response to the prescient conclusions of the few. And number 4, a disdainful dismissal of arguments to the contrary as either uninformed, irresponsible, or motivated by unworthy purposes. Although this vision is very popular and prevailing among many elites, many people disagree. Milton Friedman, Friedrich Hayek, Karl Popper, Edward Banfield, Irving Kristol, and Norman Podhoretz, people who once were part of this vision, now disagree and have voiced their thoughts to the contrary. Their reasons are many, and the various chapters of this book will touch on these topics. The larger goal of this book is to help people understand this vision, and the next chapter will identify the patterns of the vision. Chapter 2. The Pattern. The pattern of this vision is clear. First, they identify and take advantage of the perceived crisis. Second, the anointed propose a solution. Third, policies are made that lead to results, typically detrimental to the actual goals. Fourth, instead of seeking to test, question, and fine-tune the policies made, they refuse to question the policies they have made or to give any attention to the results of their policies. Regardless of whatever evidence is presented, it is ignored and the same arguments for the vision of the anointed continue to be repeated. There are 3 case examples worthy of mention. First, the so-called War on Poverty showcases this pattern. Poverty has been a tremendous issue for quite some time. To address it, the anointed left decided to give out government assistance to those in need. Did this fix the problem? It never has. What has happened is that the number of people on government assistance has increased, whereas before this point, that number has been decreasing. Instead of truly helping people free themselves of poverty, people have become more dependent upon the government. This is not a solution. But when people question this supposed solution with statistics that show that anointed approach is not working, their views are ignored because the anointed remains dismissive of dissent. A similar story can be told of the sex education program. Instead of discouraging teens from having sex and getting pregnant, the explicit content that has shared in public schools has only shown to increase what teens wanted to do. Furthermore, the left just proposed more options for undoing pregnancies through so-called family planning with birth control and abortion. Reforms to the criminal justice system reveal this same pattern. Instead of curtailing crime, the so-called reforms to the criminal justice system made it easier for criminals to get back on the streets because the legal process became such that if just the right set of procedural matters were not followed exactly, then criminals would be released, even when the guiltiness of the criminal was unquestioned. They would get out of prison sentences or otherwise, not because they were not guilty, but because of procedural issues. The result is that crime surged, and the anointed just denied it in favor of their desired changes to the legal system. Chapter 3. By the Numbers. When it comes to the use of numerical data, the anointed have an aha approach to numbers that highlight numbers that suits their case while disregarding all other data or even proper interpretations of the data they present. This is an underlying problem because numbers, though they may seem to be a more concrete set of evidence, can be manipulated or ill-used if someone does not show the entire picture. The areas in which the anointed seek to do this primarily come with statistics that seem to highlight inequalities that they claim are due to discrimination based on race. For example, when it comes to the applications for mortgages, some of the data used can suggest that lenders are discriminatory, denying more from a certain race than from others. But that data can be misread given that loan applications consider a wide variety of data points, credit, assets, employment history, etc. What the anointed particularly like to do is select one point in data, race, and not focus on why someone from that race was denied. For example, if they had too low of a credit score or too short of a credit history. Second, the anointed will assume that correlation equals causation. Just because things happened at or around the same time does not mean that they were causes of something. This topic is typically covered in introductory statistics and logic courses. Nevertheless, the anointed use these kinds of data points to remove any kind of personal responsibility for negative results from certain groups. Instead of there being other factors at play, the anointed claim that discrimination is the problem. A third area the anointed like to focus on is the family. The family is a unit that remains essential to the health of a country overall. But it is not a unit that proponents of this view like because it does not serve as the model that lends itself to third-party coercion into larger societal changes from a big government that controls many aspects of life. Why do the anointed do these sorts of things? It is all about getting their larger vision enacted into society through whatever means necessary. If distorting the data allows them to get funding to further their vision, then so be it. If presenting half-truths to society helps them gain more of a footing in society, then so be it. This is a dangerous use of data, and the so-called aha data points should be examined critically and within their context. Chapter 4. The Irrelevance of Evidence. To perpetuate the vision of the anointed make all kinds of arguments. Now everyone is free to do that, but arguments become mere claims without evidence. In fact, even when such evidence is presented to them, it is ignored, and the arguments or opinions, more precisely, continue to be presented without challenge or rebuttal. It is as if no matter what turns out to be the case based on empirical evidence, studies, etc., the claims remain the same. There are several ways in which the anointed have done this. First, they have made claims and predictions with no evidence, and when the evidence surfaced, their claims were shown to be false. Paul Ehrlich argued in 1968 in his best-known book, The Population Bomb, that humanity would starve to death in the 1970s and 80s if continued to grow. That claim has proven to be false since the population continues to grow and humanity has not starved to death. Second, the anointed employ underhanded polemical techniques. For example, they will engage in fallacious reasoning tactics, such as their all-or-nothing arguments that present a false dichotomy. For example, this kind of argumentation has been used to deny that any institution is non-political, so even classrooms for young children can be turned into propaganda centers. They utilize this kind of argumentation without supporting their assumption that it must be all-or-nothing. This is a well-known logical fallacy. There are many other tactics that the anointed use, But what readers and listeners of these kinds of arguments must be careful to do is penetrate the rhetoric to identify and combat these kinds of claims when the evidence shows itself to be contrary and when the rhetoric itself is problematic. Chapter 5, The Anointed versus the Benighted. The previous chapters have traced many of the troubling aspects of the vision of the Anointed. But what lies underneath this overall vision? What are the assumptions and deep-rooted convictions behind this perspective? To consider how the Anointed present their view, it is helpful to do so in contrast to the view of the benighted or the tragic vision that the Anointed believe the rest of the world holds to. Human capability. The tragic vision is severely and inherently limited for all when compared to the vast vision for the benefit of the Anointed. Social possibilities. The traditional vision leaves the needs of many unmet, whereas the vision of the Anointed provides solutions to social problems wherein needs will be met. Social causation. The tragic vision has inherent systemic problems, whereas the vision of the Anointed is deliberate since it's guided by the Anointed. Freedom. The tragic vision provides exemption from the power of others, whereas the vision of the Anointed centralizes power in the hands of the Anointed to achieve their goals. Justice. The tragic vision is said to process rules with just characteristics, whereas the Anointed want to see equalized, quote, justice results for everyone. Knowledge. Tragic vision allows for largely unarticulated experience of the many, whereas the vision of the Anointed allows for an articulated knowledge from the more educated Anointed. Specialization. The tragic vision allows and prizes specialization, whereas the Anointed do not prefer there to be specialists because of their desires for equal outcomes. Motivation. The tragic vision provides incentives for hard work, whereas the vision of the Anointed seeks to provide equal dispositions for all. Process costs. The tragic vision sees these as crucial, whereas the vision of the Anointed believes them to be incidental. Decision-making mechanism preferred. The tragic vision has systemic processes that convey the experiences and revealed preferences of the many, whereas the vision of the Anointed is a deliberate plan that utilizes the special talents and more advanced views of the few. Kinds of decisions preferred. The tragic vision prefers incremental decisions, whereas the vision of the Anointed seek to be categorical. Chapter 6, Crusades of the Anointed. The Crusades of the Anointed are varied, sometimes seemingly small, at least so far, but they are all attempts to overthrow society as it is and control it for the benefit of the Anointed. For example, the Anointed have sought to change the language of what people use to describe someone in a conversation by insisting that both genders be referred to when it is an anonymous person. If someone says, when someone mows their lawn, he needs to ensure, the Anointed insist that that person says he or she needs to ensure, rather than leaving the generic he that would refer to anyone. The Anointed suggest that this kind of language is repressive to women. This may seem like a small point, but the Anointed have gained widespread control over language in this way. Their insistence has made its way throughout academics, such as now it is often required to publish materials using such language. One of the primary fronts of the Crusade of the Anointed has been in the courts. There are at least two areas that deserve mention, though there are several. First, the Anointed have sought to have people excused for crimes based on insanity. Even when these people engage in such crimes repeatedly over some time, crimes including such things as murder, that they can be excused if the person or their attorney can prove their mental insanity. Although there is no doubt that mental capacity of a person remains important, these kinds of arguments have gotten well-known criminals off the hook. Second, the Anointed have also sought to so change the meanings of the Constitution to create laws in their favor such that multiple justices have called out their attempts. For example, on several matters related to religion, the Anointed have sought to use the First Amendment against certain religious groups, even to deny them their right to practice their religion. religion has never been a friend of the anointed because it too has not been the sort of thing that easily falls in line with a controlling vision. There are certain key other areas that the anointed have sought to attack, but the common denominator of all the crusades is to attack areas of freedom for the benighted, those who hold the tragic vision to make way for the control of the so-called equal outcomes that provide ultimate control and benefits for the anointed. Chapter 7, The Vocabulary of the Anointed. The way people speak about things and issues matters. The very words we use can change a perspective about a certain issue. It can be the difference between accepting or rejecting what someone else is saying. The anointed understand this point very well. When they speak of their position, they prefer to speak of it as a matter of principle, in contrast to an emotional issue of those who hold different perspectives. It is not as though the anointed take the time to justify their use of these categories and oppositions they create. They employ them, and they insist others do the same. This is an immediate way for the anointed to position themselves in a better light for others to be more accepting of their position. Another example will highlight this further. When they speak of income distribution, the anointed forget to mention that income is not something that is distributed. Income is earned. When some people have more than others, various factors result in who has more or less. It is not as though it is a matter of fairness or unfairness, but the way the anointed framed the entire discussion from the beginning makes it seem like it is a matter of fairness of distribution. Chapter 8, Courting Disaster. The anointed have taken to the courts to seek to enact their vision for the world. First, they have sought to assume their vision and their understanding of terms to create processes that had not existed before. For example, they assume their view of cosmic justice, which is their effort to offset any pre-existing inequalities, and how judges are supposed to interpret the law to overturn criminal convictions by turning the table on the courts. It has become no longer the issue of whether or not someone has committed a certain crime. It has also become the case that prosecuting attorneys is given the burden to prove that there is no kind of discrimination that may have resulted in the committed crime. The anointed are trying to find ways around the law as it is, and that it has been interpreted historically in line with the Constitution to advance their position. Second, the anointed have made the legal process much more challenging by making it more difficult for courts to select jurors. Part of their goal of enacting their vision of cosmic justice is to find people who would be open to their position rather than any other. This change in process of jury selection has created diminished returns. Even in cases wherein the defendant's attorney is not presenting a not guilty plea, the jurors are still supposed to assume innocence due to this understanding of cosmic justice. This view of cosmic justice is not the kind of justice we typically think of when we think of justice. It is a kind of self-serving justice that only seeks to advance the vision of the anointed. Third, the anointed seek judicial activism. This kind of activism can be used to restrain judges in ways not previously known or to push for rulings that go well outside of interpreting the law, according to how it is intended. Instead, these activists insist on interpreting the law in line with their view of cosmic justice. Thus, laws and words that had commonly understood applications and meanings can now be changed without notice as long as it meets what the anointed want to accomplish. The result of this kind of influence on the courts has been disastrous, such that the anointed have let the guilty go free and have sought to use the courts to create laws by their rulings instead of being a place where the law is to be interpreted and applied. Chapter 9, Optional Reality. The anointed's vision is an optional reality that seeks to enact their major propositions against all opposing arguments and facts to bring reality in line with their vision instead of adjusting their view to actual reality. Their view has five key propositions. 1. Painful social situations or problems exist not because of inherent limits to knowledge or resources or inadequacies inherent in human beings, but because other people lack the wisdom or virtue of the anointed. 2. Evolved beliefs represent only a socially constructed set of notions, not reflections of an underlying reality. Therefore, the way by which problems can be solved is by applying the articulated rationality of the anointed, rather than by relying on evolved traditions or systemic processes growing out of the experiences of the masses. 3. Social causation is intentional rather than systemic, so that condemnation is in order when various features of the human experience are either unhappy or appear anomalous to the anointed. 4. Great social or biological dangers can be averted only by imposition of the vision or of the anointed on less enlightened people by the government. 5. Opposition to the vision of the anointed is due not to different reading of complex or inconclusive evidence, but exists because opponents are lacking either intellectually or morally or both. None of these propositions require testing or evidence of any kind. To question what they say with any kind of hard evidence will result in being put out from the group, and they will use their various tactics to silence their opposition. The remaining question for readers of this book is to consider whether they want to live in this optional reality purported by the anointed's vision, or live in the world as it is. This world has cause and effect, empirical evidence, and much more. There is no logical stopping place to what the anointed will try to accomplish because only their vision matters. This sort of vision is very costly to society, and it never ends up working. It ends up costing so many so much for accomplishing nothing, but seeking to benefit the few anointed at the expense of everyone else. Books at a Glance book summaries are available by subscription only, and except for brief quotes, may not be reproduced in whole or in part without express written permission.